So I'm Hans Scottmeyer from Brock University in Ontario, Canada. And I'm going to do something a bit different than what's been done previously, which to those of you who know me won't be a huge shock. I'm going to read a very distilled bit from a chapter that is, this will hold still, that is in a book that I'm working on with Kira Scarabaggi and Mark Kruger called With Children, which is different ways of thinking about CYC practice and institutions. This little bit that I'm going to read today is focused on the possibility of the CYC institution being entirely rethought as a political project rather than a remedial or therapeutic project. And for reasons I'll try to explicate here. So I'd like to begin by suggesting a rethinking of child and youth care. Instead of an enterprise that is comprised of either discipline, control, or even behavioral change, I would propose a definition of care centered on the creative possibilities of the collective capacities to be found in the institutions where CYC takes place. Such capacities, I would argue, are rooted in the encounters that take place in such institutions and their extended networks, such as schools, outdoor programming, street work, etc. Such an approach would be founded on a radical reconfiguration of our program that engages what Hart and Negri have called the common. The common is a relatively complicated political concept, but for our purposes, I want to center on the common as what we call relational aspects of our field. Hart and Negri refer to these as the results of social production. These are the ways in which we express our capacity for generating meaning and producing information about ourselves and the world in which we live. It is also, and quite importantly, I think, increasingly the mode of production under the regimes of global capitalism. Indeed, Hart and Negri argue that social production has become increasingly commodified as what they call immaterial labor in an expanding realm of digital commerce, such as e-learning, social networking, social skills training in the workplace, and the communications industry as a whole. If the sites for child and youth care, such as residential programs, group homes, emergency shelter, schools, streets, etc., constitute a form of the common, in that they are sites that engage productions of meaning and information about everyone working and living there, then I would argue that they hold two capacities. One, they can be sites that reproduce subjects available for appropriation and exploitation by global capital. Or two, they can be sites for developing subjective and social forms of revolt and resistance. In both instances, the innate capacities of the assembled bodies of youth and adults form a machinery of creative force. Such force within the world of child and youth care institution exists by definitions as what I would call a monstrous space of deviance. Foucault, in his essay Of Other Spaces, defines a kind of space that he calls a heterotopia. He defines a heterotopia as a space of deviation in which individuals whose behavior is deviant in relation to the required mean or norm are placed. His argument about heterotopias is complex, but suffice it to say that a heterotopia is an existing space in society that contains deviants, such as a psychiatric hospital, a prison, or a child and youth care facility. If child and youth care facilities are both heterotopias and production sites of the common, then I would argue that they hold the capacity for social antagonism as harbingers of a new social form out of sync with their own time. Indeed, I would argue that they operate at full capacity when they signal a crisis through a rupture in the norms and means of their own historical period. To use Nietzsche's term, they are untimely and function as a hinge to the future. In Marxist terms, CYC sites as heterotopias develop as a response, not to individual or family problems, but to crises in society provoked by transitions between modes of production. Hart and Negri, following Marx, argued that the way we produce the world through farming, industry, or currently global media technology both produces and is produced by forms of subjectivity unique to that given historical period. As we move from industrial capitalism to a new order of global technology, we simultaneously begin to shift literally who we are. We literally become what Deleuze and Guattari refer to as a becoming people. In the transition, our very subjectivity that has been formed around the old mode of production and all the dominant modes of control and discipline associated with that mode are thrown into crisis. This, of course, produces deviant subjects and the necessity for the old order to attempt to control and contain emerging perverse and rebellious subjects. Hence the need for heterotopic spaces that contain subjects that function on the edge of a break with their own time. This view of CYC institutions, of course, is quite different from the traditional way we see them. From this perspective, all CYC practice is located at the edge of an ongoing insurrection, resistance, rebellion, and refusal, both on the part of young people and the staff. Given this, it's not surprising that all such institutions function either in crisis or at the edge of crisis at all times. From an eco-psychological point of view, the heterotopic institutions cannot be understood in any way outside of the broader social context. CYC institutions reflect the crisis of rule in the face of insurrectionary new forms of social subjectivity. Their very existence signals the failure of the form of the dominant rule to control and contain its own subjects. Indeed, one might argue that the heterotopic space of the CYC institution is ideally suited to the production of a revolutionary common and democratic aspirations. In a similar vein, one might then argue that the system of rule imposed by dominant forces of conventional society within such institution is a perversion of the common. Such a perversion takes the creative force constituted by bodies of deviance, rebellion, and refusal, and turns it against itself into resentment, apathy, conformity, and self-destruction. This is what Hart and Negri refer to as the corruption of the common. Hart and Negri argues that for a new form of economy, signaled by a turn towards global social production and democratic rule, to emerge fully, there need to be certain conditions. First, they suggest that social creativity cannot emerge under conditions of obedience or contractual obligation. They argue that the legitimization of authority always and inevitably dampens or even blocks the production of the common through subjectivity. Instead, they call for a freedom developed through education that trains all of us how to work with language, codes, ideas, and affects in the ability to work with others. They also call for a new subject who is not an individual. They state that an individual can never produce the common, no more than an individual can generate a new idea, without relying on the foundations of common ideas and intellectual communication with others. And finally, they call for a form of equality premised in a valorization of difference. They suggest that the creative force of the common is significantly restricted when difference configures hierarchical rule. The question becomes then, what exactly does a CYC institution do? According to our analysis thus far, it constitutes a significant site of social struggle between new and old modes of social production. Subjectivity and appropriation, domination and creativity, rebellion and compliance, as well as refusal and obedience. As the common, it is a site of social production where new modes of social interaction, as well as knowledges, languages, codes, and information, are produced in an ongoing contestation. As we have noted, Hart and Negri posit the common as the new mode of production for the emerging world of global technology. In this sense, as we've suggested then, CYC institutions hold the possibilities of being laboratories for new forms of social and political production. However, in their current configuration as sites of behavior management and social control, they constitute what Hart and Negri refer to as corruption. The question then is there an uncorrupted form of the common that CYC institutions might investigate? Hart and Negri offer a brief but evocative section on the relationship of insurrection and institutions. They note that the project of developing democratic social forms composed of autonomous subjects capable of communication, cooperation, and creativity, is in some ways inimical to the development and sustenance of institutions. They also suggest, however, that without institutions to sustain revolutionary change, it will ultimately succumb to some form of dominant rule. The trick is to develop institutions of a different sort. This, then, is the task I would propose for Seaway institutions in the closing section of my remarks. So what is this different kind of institution? First, it's not an institution premised on a social contract in which one forfeits the right to rebellion and conflict in exchange for social stability. Instead, there is an acceptance of conflict as internal to the constant foundation of society. In terms of CYC, this would mean that we would open ourselves to conflict, resistance, rebellion, as healthy indicators of those things that need to change in our institutions. We would see the institution as composed of all of us together in struggle, with accountability across all components of the institution. We would not hold any one person responsible for a disruption or a conflict, but would see any conflict as an indicator of our collective need to creatively respond. To do this, we would need to engage in a politics of difference, premised not in hierarchy, but inequality mediated by function. Instead of negotiating rules or contracts for certain behaviors with sanctions and punishments such as discharge, we would negotiate terms of creative struggle and conflict open to the necessity of constant revision. This institutional openness to conflict and struggle would require a different mode of decision making. Hart and Negri suggest what they call a myriad of micropolitical paths. By this, we might imagine CYC practice as collective decision making that occurs throughout the day at multiple sites throughout the institution. Decisions are premised contingently on the conditions present in any given interaction as it occurs, rather than on preset institutional values or rules. Common practices are arrived at and composed through conflict. Such practices are not delivered from an administrative top-down structure, but are made up through the concretion of myriad and multiple creative exchanges that are always open to transformation as conditions change. While this may sound radical at first, it actually reflects what our field has valorized as relational practice of the encounter and the magic of the milieu. In perverted and corrupted form, these practices have been driven by the needs of dominant institutions where relationships are bargained for privileges or acceptance, and the milieu becomes a sophisticated form of groupthink and psychological bullying. Under the form of the common, these practices are released into autonomous and voluntary encounters in which singular subjectivities struggle to express their capacities. In such a model, the institution is shaped by the bodies that compose it. Such an approach stands in opposition to the more conventional model of CYC, where both the staff and youth are shaped to the ends of the institution. This means that the institution forms what Hart and Negri call a constituent rather than a constituted power. Instead of a form of rule that is composed of preset structures and rights of dominion, CYC institutions would have norms and obligations established by those living and working in those sites. Such institutional structures and practices would be open to a process of constant evolution that would focus on two primary elements. One, the refusal of any party to dominate or control the institution. Two, the practices necessary for successfully mediating destructive conflicts. In my own experience, the two things are not unrelated. Finally, Hart and Negri follow Lenin and acknowledging that human nature as it is now is not capable of democracy. Lenin said, in their habits, routines, mentalities, and in the million capillary practices of everyday life, people are wedded to hierarchy, identity, segregation, and in general, corrupt forms of the common. Certainly true of most of the young people and staff I've encountered in my work, and it is most certainly true of myself on any given day and any given situation. So how do we get from where we believe ourselves to be to where we actually are as heterotopic harbingers of a common to come? Part of the answer is to be found in Foucault's implied rejection of the utopic. Rather than seek the perfect ideal that we've sketched above, we need to begin a practice of searching for those small indicators of possibility indicated in every interaction that we have. I would suggest that we might well investigate the capacities already expressed by young people and staff when they exceed the institutional parameters of discipline and act instead with love. By love, in this instance, I mean the commitment to struggle with one another so each may express their capacity to its fullest. Hart and Negri state, quote, that misery is the condition of being separated from what one can do, what one can become. To the degree that our institutions separate anyone within them from what they can do or become, they are machineries that produce misery. The alternative is to produce institutions that promulgate joy. Joy being the affect of bodies together, creating and innovative while collectively governing themselves. I would call upon each of us to imagine a CYC practiced, premised in joy and love. In such a practice, it would become an impossibility to start to discharge a vulnerable young person onto the streets, because we would know that the fight we were having with them is the fight we were having with ourselves, and that the key to bringing a new world to come rests in the willingness to continue to struggle together as one. Thanks. So I'll take any questions, comments, worries, or concerns.
What will you do?
That remains to be seen. It's kind of a contingent sort of thing, isn't it?
You talked obviously about the situation within an organization, a CYC in place. Now, one of the big forms of control that we have is the registration of individual workers and inspection and regulation of the places where we work. My own view is residential workers are an oppressed minority on the whole, many of us have difficulties with that part. What's your view on the regulation, registration, inspection?
Right. I'm going to try to paraphrase this for what you said, so I hope I get it right. What I hear you saying is, okay, so this is within the institution. What about external forces of regulation and discipline that we all have to deal with, right? What do I think about that? Foucault has this really, really interesting moment. He has this debate with Noam Chomsky. And in the debate with Noam Chomsky, he says, the first revolutionary act is to undo the habits and beliefs of our own age in ourselves. So the first act is here and in relation to the people we're actually struggling with. To the degree there are outside forces that are causing us difficulties, that's a secondary concern. Because even if we get that right, if we haven't got this right, the inside right, if we haven't undone it in ourselves, then we're quite likely to load everything that we're against in through the back door. And we can see that in the history of revolutions all throughout the 20th century. And we can certainly see it in many of our own practices, including agencies I was involved in which we attempted to do really, really innovative and democratic practices while we were still really wed to ideological purity, to the ability to boss folks about, to being important, all of this sort of fuss, right? So I think institutionally there's a role for middle management and the upper level bureaucracy within any institution to shield you from too much trouble from the outside. That's sort of their job. Is to function in that way, to do the things necessary so that they're not in your business too much. But the real work that I'm talking about here happens on the floor. And it happens in your life and it happens in your heart. So the revolution begins with yourself in every interaction you have with a young person. You get that sorted out so that you actually have political alliances with young people within your institution so that you're all working on the common page to common political interests. Then you have a much broader base and a much broader base constituency to resist anything on the outside. If you have the kids and the families on board with you and you're all on the same page and the staff is all on the same page and you've been struggling and you figured out how to operate as a political unit within the institution, as a common political unit, you're a much more effective force in terms of dealing with the folks who are trying to impinge on you. I mean, down to the point of if they decide to defund your institution, if you're really all on the same page, you could all just say, no, we're staying. The hell with you. That's fine. Take the money. We got the house. We got the institution. Belongs to us. Doesn't belong to you to start with. So fine, that's fine. We'll figure out something else to do. Right? Then you don't have to worry about those people so much.
So this paper is a reflection of kind of the bigger the book. You said this is coming from the book.
Yeah.
Are you looking at it conscious effort toward this way of thinking about practice?
I don't do that in this piece in the book, but I have done it in a lot of other places.
And will there be elements of that in the book?
No, very probably not. Although the book's an edited volume, right? So this is just one chapter. It's my chapter. But in my own writing, particularly the writing I've done with my partner, Kathy, we've used a lot of examples of institutions that do this sort of work on the ground.
Summer Hill here.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of what you're talking about sounds very congruent with.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, there's lots of examples. We try to draw from our own experience.
Mm-hmm. On the one level, it seems utopic and almost impossible, and then I started thinking about Summer Hill, and then I became curious about other possible examples of people who are actually making little pockets of this at certain points in time, because we're all quite limited by...
Now, let me just... So if one of the implied comments or questions there is the question of, is this too utopic? And then you say, well, the little pockets.
And I think you addressed that well.
Yeah, yeah. I want to just scoop that last little bit and say, there's no outside to global capitalism. It's not as though you can stand outside of it and look in on it and develop some sort of pure stance in which you don't engage with capitalism in some form. It's a global system of rule. It's quite impossible to stand outside. What you can do, and what's suggested by heterotopic spaces, is that global system of rule has to create spaces within it of containment of specifically the forces of insurrection and deviance that can undo it. To the degree we cooperate with those folks in transforming those subjects into good bourgeois citizens, then we're not being tremendously helpful if we think capitalism is sort of a brutal, nasty bit of business. On the other hand, if you do think it's a nasty, brutal bit of business, then using the contained spaces of deviance, because let's face it, most of the people who work in this field are deviant, as are the kids.
Yeah.
Right?
But, you know, Winnicott considered deviance a manifestation of hope, actually.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think so. I agree with that. It's a manifestation of possibility.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.